my husband said to me, you know, what are you going to do with your career, Sarah? And I said to him, well, I know that I don't want to go back and work in the hospital system. And he said, you know what you need to do? You need to go and do your midwifery in a developing country. And I said, yes, that's always been my heart and my passion.
Welcome to Real Faith, conversations about the impact faith has on our lives and the challenges we go through, helping us today and giving us hope for tomorrow. That's Real People, Real Life and Real Faith with Eric Scatterbo.
Mother Teresa was quoted as saying that when you look at the masses and all their needs, you will feel overwhelmed. But if you look at one person in need, you will make a start. And that's more or less what happened to Sarah David after she made a trip to Papua New Guinea and learned about a woman who died shortly after giving birth because she didn't have access to quality health care. Sarah was inspired to make a start and help, and that's exactly what she did. We'll find out the exciting ways the Lord is using her to make a difference as she shares her story with us today. Sarah David, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Eric. It's great to be here.
So glad to have you with us, and you're joining us from Perth today.
Sunny Perth. It's gorgeous. Very good. Gorgeous day.
Glad to hear that. And I just wanted to chat with you about that quote from Mother Teresa. That is so true about human nature, that when we think about all the needs in the world, you can be overwhelmed. But when you think about one person and helping one person, that's what really kind of makes a difference. Is that the case for you?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, it just hits the mark. It's that, you know, your neighbor. So that person that you can see, that person that's in front of you, that you can speak with, that you can actually, you know, influence, show care or show kindness or walk alongside or whatever. I just think it is such a powerful image. And for me personally, it's helped me so much as I look at the needs around the world.
Yeah. Okay, and we're going to find out about that one person that tugged your heart and inspired you to do what you're doing today. But first, we're going to go back and find out your story and what led up to you having your heart tugged. It all started back in South Africa, is that right?
Yeah. So I grew up, well, I did some of my growing up in South Africa. And when I was about 8 or 9, I remember I was riding my bike one day. And I saw this little girl lying on the side of the road, and she had obviously come off her bike, and I went over to her to see what was wrong and if I could help her. And she'd got her toes caught in the, you know, it's the days before we had bike helmets and, you know, all the occupational health and safety around riding.
Yes.
So
yes.
She was riding barefoot.
Oh, wow.
And she had got her toes caught in the wheel.
Oh,
and so
in the
she
spokes.
Really, yeah, in, that's right, in the spokes. And so she had really messed up her feet.
Mm.
And she was sitting by the side of the road and she was crying. And obviously there was blood and everything.
Mm.
And she also spoke a different language. She spoke Afrikaans and I was English.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to just understand what was happening for her and where I could take her. And thankfully, her house was just a few houses down. So I managed to help her hobble along, and I took her and I knocked on this door. And her big burly father answered the door and sort of handed her over to him. And I remember just feeling a great sense of like, gee, I've really helped someone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I stopped, I asked what she needed, and then I managed to get her to help. So even though I didn't bind up her wounds, I remember just that feeling of like I've really made a difference for that little girl.
Yeah.
And from then on, you know, we used to see each other and wave at each other on the bus or, you know, or whatever. And I thought, you know, caring for other people is really good. It makes me feel good.
Mm-hmm. So from such a young age, you already kind of had that feeling of wanting to help.
Yeah. And I also, you know, I then after that, I remember noticing that, you know, like if my dad had cut himself or, you know, needed a Band-Aid, I was always the one who wanted to go to the first aid kit.
See, I'm the one that goes the other way.
I was totally drawn. No, it was give me blood and guts or pus or give me the tweezers. Get the thorns out of, you know, feet or
you
whatever.
You are much needed in the world.
I used to just love that. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, and of course, alluding to what you become, a nurse, you know, that's obviously a great quality to have.
Yeah.
Okay. But we want to go back to your childhood. What was childhood like? Was it a positive atmosphere?
Well, yes and no. I mean, there were, when I reflect on my childhood, it was, grew up, those early growing up days in South Africa was very conservative. Mm-hmm. It was at the peak of apartheid.
An injustice, and you're against injustice.
Absolutely. And, I didn't know it then. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what injustice was. I didn't even know what apartheid was when I was a young girl growing up. But I remember that I just loved our, we had a maid, and her name was Evelina. And Evelina was, she was warm, she was soft.
Was
she
black?
She was black. Mm-hmm. But I remember, you know, she lived in a little sort of a unit that was next to our house on our property. Mm-hmm. And I remember I used to love going into her room, which was not really allowed, but I used to sort of sneak in there, and then I'd love to sit up on her bed and just see how she lived. And, you know, everything was always so neat and clean, and there was this distinctive smell. And I just loved the African people. Mm. I just loved them. But, I mean, we had a very privileged life because we were white. So we had access to, you know, education and good health care and all of those things. But I could see that there were, you know, poor black people around.
I'm just curious to know, how did you react personally when you learned about apartheid, which was systematic racism? What was your reaction?
Well, the first time that I realized what it was when I was 10 and we'd just moved to Perth.
Oh.
And I came to school here, primary school, and I remember that in the classroom there were some Indian people in our class. Now, we didn't have that in South Africa. It was all white. Mm-hmm. And I remember as well that some of the kids, when they found out I was from South Africa, they called me a racist.
Oh.
And I remember feeling very undignified and, well, I was indignant. That's rather the word. Mm-hmm. I was indignant, and I just couldn't believe what they were saying about me and my country where I came from. And so I was shocked, and I denied it actually because I didn't realize what an injustice it was that hadn't sort of entered into my thinking, my growing mind. And then when I went to high school here in Perth, there was a lot in the media about, Desmond Tutu, about Nelson Mandela and their fight for freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just being glued to this because in South Africa, we never even saw this on television.
Oh.
You know, we actually grew up in quite an oppressed society that they only had television in 1975.
Oh.
And it was state controlled. Mm-hmm. So they controlled everything. They controlled everything in the media.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the first time, we were seeing pictures of what was happening in South Africa that we had no idea were going on.
Oh, how ironic that you grew up in South Africa and didn't even know the plight of black people in your home country. And it wasn't until you got to Australia that you learned about the injustice.
That's right.
And what
remember
was your
that
reaction?
I was a child. But remember, I was a child.
Yeah.
Yes. So I wasn't, wasn't on my radar, you know.
Yeah, you're not thinking about politics and political systems when you're 8 years old.
That's right.
Most people, anyway.
Yeah. So there were these like emerging questions that were formulating, and this realization that, oh my goodness, you know, this apartheid, it's segregation and it's racist and it's oppressive, and I've been part of that, and I'm a white person and I've benefited from that. But the black Africans, they have, you know, there's been this incredible injustice against them. And then to make matters even more interesting, when I was 15, we then moved back to South Africa.
Oh.
Because we were only here temporarily with my dad's work. He was a mining engineer with the Argyle Diamond Mine up north of Western Australia. Mm-hmm. And at the end of our five-year tenure, my parents decided that, we wanted to go back to South Africa. And I went back kicking and screaming to finish the last 2 years of high school. And this was in the 80s, the late 80s. And, of course, this was the time where the ANC was really rearing up.
African National Congress, ANC?
That's right. And mm-hmm. That's right. And their terrorist sort of arm really took over. Mm. And so every day there were disruptions and there were bombs that went off and there was a lot of fear going on. And I was in a very, very legalistic school and I just felt oppressed. I remember I just...
You personally?
Yeah. I just wanted to break free because if you spoke out at the government, you could be imprisoned.
Oh.
You were not allowed to read certain books because if you were seen to be anti the government, you could just be thrown into prison and just left there, you know, with no charges. So that was happening. So there was a lot of fear. Mm-hmm. And I remember there was also we had a young man, a young African man who was at our church and he was trying to study. And in the townships, and the townships were the areas, the zones where the Africans were kept, and they were not allowed out of those zones. You know, there were curfews on. Mm-hmm. And he was really afraid this one time because there was necklacing happening in the townships. And necklacing was where they, the other Africans would get people that they felt were not on board with their terrorist activities.
Oh, so they view them as traitors?
View them as traitors. Mm-hmm. They would capture them, put car tires around their body, so imprison them in car tires and then set the tires alight.
Oh.
And they called it necklacing. Yeah, it was horrific.
Yeah.
And this was going on and this young man was really afraid. And so my father said to him, "You come and stay at our house."
Mm.
Which was against the law.
Oh.
You could not have a black person stay in your house if they didn't have a pass. And, of course, there was a curfew going on as well. And I remember, like, really admiring my dad and my mum for doing this, to taking this black person into their home, and it was against the law, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We had to be all hush-hush about it, just so that he could be safe. So he stayed there for a couple of weeks. Yeah, so all of this was going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, but it was really only because of my experience in Australia and being confronted deeply about this issue of apartheid, that this was not right, that when I went back to South Africa and then, you know, living amongst this turmoil and this sort of crisis, you know, was the beginning of the end of apartheid, really, in the late 80s.
Our guest today is Sarah David in Perth, who's sharing the events in her life that have shaped her into who she is today. We'll hear more of Sarah's story when we return right here on Real Faith.